So we're continuing in our series on food for thought, and this evening we're in the home of a prominent Pharisee. So perhaps a place to start might be to think about who were the Pharisees. And the Pharisees were a group of religious leaders, and they gave oral tradition equal authority to the written word of God. In contrast to the other group of religious leaders, the Sadducees, who considered only the written word of God to be from God, and they had a special focus on the books of Moses. That's the books Genesis to Deuteronomy. So you see, often when Jesus encounters the Pharisees, part of the comments that you have to make is about the oral tradition that they add to the word of God. One of the other interesting differences between the Pharisees and the Sadducees is that the Pharisees tended to be wealthy and held powerful positions, including that of chief priests and the high priest, and that they held the majority of the 70 seats of the ruling council called the Sanhedrin. So the ordinary people of the time were far more interested in listening to the Pharisees than the Sadducees, because the Sadducees were wealthy. What did Jesus think of the Pharisees? Well, here's a few of the things that Jesus said. Jesus said to his disciples, "Be careful, be on your guard against the yeast of the Pharisees and the Sadducees." And when Jesus said that to the disciples, they didn't quite get what he's talking about. So he had to go into a bit of explanation. And at the end of that, Matthew writes this in Matthew 16. "Then the disciples understood that he was not telling them to guard against the yeast used in bread, but against the teaching of the Pharisees and Sadducees." Jesus tells the people to be on their guard against the teaching of the Pharisees and Sadducees. In Acts, it says that the Christians who were in a place called Berea were more noble than those in Thessalonica. I love that expression, more noble. I'm not quite sure how you are more noble, but it says they were more noble because when Paul preached, they examined the scriptures to check that what he was saying was correct. I wonder how many of us, after we hear a message at church, go home and check whether what's been said from up here is actually correct. Or are you relying on us? Because life groups is a great place where you can get together with others and check what's being said and reach your own conclusions. But Jesus told the people to be on their guard against the teaching of the Pharisees and Sadducees. Jesus also had this to say about the Pharisees. He said to the Pharisees and the Sadducees, "You brood of vipers," or some translations say, "nest of snakes." Now, what's a nest of snakes like? I'm sure many of you, if not all of you, have seen the bit from Planet Earth 2 with the snakes chasing the young lizard. That is what a nest of snakes looks like. And that's what Jesus says to the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And it's actually even a bigger put down than you can imagine. Because if you remember back in Genesis chapter 1, Satan comes to Adam and Eve in the form of a serpent or snake. And Jesus calls them snakes. Jesus never minced his words with the Pharisees. And in Matthew 23, there are what's referred to as the seven woes on the teachers of the law and the Pharisees, which Jesus pronounces. And here's just one of them. "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You give a tenth of your spices, mint, dill, and cumin, but you have neglected the more important matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness. Jesus' strongest words were for the religious leaders of the time. And yet, in spite of all that he said and his view of the Pharisees, Jesus is at the home of a Pharisee. No one is irredeemable. The very worst people that you can think of, none of them are irredeemable for Jesus. Jesus goes to the home of a Pharisee, in spite of everything that he said about them. And this is what happens there. One Sabbath, when Jesus went to eat in the house of a prominent Pharisee, he was being carefully watched. There in front of him was a man suffering from abnormal swelling of his body. Jesus asked the Pharisees and experts in the law, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not?" But they remained silent. So taking hold of the man, he healed him and sent him on his way. Then he asked them, "If one of you has a child or an ox that falls into a well on the Sabbath day, will you not immediately pull it out?" And they had nothing to say. The Pharisees were watching Jesus carefully to see what he did on the Sabbath. So what is the Sabbath all about? Well, you know, sometimes people have a view that God's kind of down on things and that the Bible's all about thou shalt nots. I don't know if you come across that people have that kind of view. But actually, it couldn't be further from the truth. And in this case, God invents holidays. If you go back to the Old Testament, God invents holidays. In Exodus 20, there is the Sabbath day. In Leviticus 23, there's the Sabbath week, which by the time of the New Testament is referred to as Pentecost. And then, even better, in Leviticus 25, there's the Sabbath year or Jubilee. God invents holidays. What a great idea. In fact, if you actually go through the Old Testament and look at all the times when Jesus says, you know, you should stop, you should celebrate, you should have a feast and have a festival. Most people in this country who are working would love to have holidays that long. God invented holidays. And the reason for it is this. You have to remember, when God gives Moses the law, the group of people he gives it to were a bunch of former Hebrew slaves. They didn't know what time off meant. When you're a slave, you're either at work or you're on call. They're the only two states you get, at work or on call. In the same way, because them, their parents, their grandparents, had no other experience than being slaves. They had no idea how to rule themselves or look after themselves. And God gives them the law. And if you go through the books of the Old Testament, the books of Moses, you can read what God did for these people. So God invents holidays. It's a really good idea. And aren't we glad that God invented them? Wouldn't it be awful if we were stuck with working 365 days a year? And who's to say that if the Sabbath had not become part of the Christian church, that we would actually have holidays today? I wonder if you're familiar with these verses from Isaiah 58. Is not this the kind of fasting I have chosen? To loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke? To set the oppressed free and break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe them, and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood. Then your light will break forth like the dawn, and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will be on your rear guard. Then you will call, and the Lord will answer. You will cry for help, and he will say, "Here am I." If you do away with the yoke of oppression, with the pointing finger and malicious talk, and if you spend yourselves on behalf of the hungry and satisfy the needs of the oppressed, then your light will rise in the darkness and your night will become like the noonday. I wonder if you are familiar with those verses. Just put your hand up if you've heard those verses read before. Yeah, a few of you, not as many as I thought, might remember those verses. I've heard them quoted often in church and heard sermons on them. But interestingly, I've never heard these ones read that I can remember, which follow on afterwards. If you keep your feet from breaking the Sabbath and from doing as you please on my holy day, if you call the Sabbath a delight and the Lord's holy day honorable, and if you honor it by not going your own way and not doing as you please or speaking idle words, then you will find your joy in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride in triumph on the heights of the land and to feast on the inheritance of your father Jacob, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. What's interesting there is that God intended the Sabbath to be a delight, something to enjoy and joyful. I wonder what we think about the Sabbath today and how we think those words relate to us. What did Jesus think about the Sabbath? Well, in Matthew 12, Jesus concludes a passage by saying, "If you had known what these words mean, 'I desire mercy, not sacrifice,' you would have not condemned the innocent, for the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." Jesus declares himself Lord of the Sabbath. And in Mark chapter 2, he says, "People are not made for the good of the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for the good of the people." And that's the thing the Pharisees got wrong. They didn't realize that God intended the Sabbath for the good of the people. They thought the people had to fit in with the Sabbath. Now, in the passage that we're looking at tonight, in the home of the Pharisee, the passage goes on and it begins the next section. "When he noticed how the guests picked the places of honor at the table," and Jesus then goes on to speak some more, but he concludes with these words about how people were taking places of honor. "For all those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted." Now, it's not very common these days to use the word in everyday use, to exalt or exalting, is it? We don't go around saying that person is exalting themselves. That's not the kind of language we use. But if you think about these people who were going for the positions of honor at the table, I guess as well these days, not many of us get invited to places where it's important where you actually sit. When we go to the Sheds men's curry night, it's not a real big deal about where you're sitting, you know, in relation to one another. Our culture's not like that. But what kind of words do we use in our culture today? We use words like image or status or prestige. They're the kind of words we use today. Do we exalt ourselves today, even though we don't actually say it? Would Jesus, for example, own a BMW or a Gucci bag or Jimmy Choo trainers? If you try to think of an up-to-date example of Jesus telling the parable or the story of the, not the story actually, recounting how the people sought places of honour, what would be his modern equivalent of that story? There's something else you can think about if you're in life groups this week. Even more reason, if you haven't already joined a life group, to join one. So here's some food for thought for this week. Are we like the Pharisees? In a different passage I didn't mention, Jesus accused the Pharisees of creating a stumbling block for people trying to find God. Are we in any way hindering people finding Jesus? Are we like the Pharisees at all? When it comes to the Sabbath, do we make the Sabbath a joy for everyone? Or do we follow traditions or rituals that make the Sabbath less joyful than it could be? Don't know what you think we should do on the Sabbath. Or do you think we have rituals? Ever thought about why we have Sunday services at 10:30 and evening services at 6 o'clock? Well, in case you're wondering, it's not actually in the Bible, the set times. We generally have them in the morning when we do. That's to allow the farmers to feed their animals, milk the cows before they came to church. That's why we have morning services. And the evening ones, they started when gaslighting became a reality, and it was an evangelistic thing. You could invite your friends to church and come and experience gaslighting, which is why we have evening services. Strange, isn't it, that the world's changed completely, but we still have a morning and an evening service. Do we follow traditions or rituals that make the Sabbath less joyful? And are we concerned with our image and status? Do we buy things we need, or do we buy them for other reasons? Why do we buy the things we do? Jesus had some interesting things to say, which give us some food for thought. And something else for you to discuss at your life groups this week, if you're in one.